everybody, and welcome to our third attempt at recording this month's review of Doolittle. We've literally had to reschedule the recording, and then try to do an over-the-internet recording, and now we're here. But for us, this is actually a pretty good track record. Sad as it is.
I just wish it was for a better movie. I'd go to all this effort gladly for a better movie.
Yeah. Now, Doolittle is, of course, the story of John Doolittle, who, depending on which version, either has the natural ability to talk to animals, or through years of study has somehow learned the language of every animal on the planet. Which, I don't know how that's feasible, but it's a kid's movie, so fuck it.
Yeah.
And to be perfectly frank, it's a kid's movie is probably the phrase that would counterbalance virtually every complaint I'm going to have.
Yeah.
But still...
At the same time, it's a kid's movie that, early spoiler alert, is concluded with giving a leek enema, as in the vegetable, giving a leek enema. So, kid's movie, yes, but also, it's hard to tell where it's aiming for.
Well, actually hold that thought, because that was a point that I did want to hit. But very basic plot. The movie opens with the story of John Doolittle and his wife. It was either Lynn or Lillian, I can't remember.
I believe it's Lillian.
Okay, we're gonna go with that.
Yeah, gorgeous animated sequence that I would have loved to have seen a full feature of. With Robert Downey Jr. all done up in like classic 90s Disney prints. It looked amazing. I immediately was just like, oh, you're just doing this intro, and then you're going to drop us into shit.
Yeah, she's not that far off. I mean, this animated sequence is basically Doolittle traveling around the world, having adventures with Lara Croft.
Yeah.
Right away, you're intrigued. But then the movie cuts to modern day, and... we meet Stubbins, the requisite child lead, because, again, kids' movie.
He has about as much charisma as someone named Stubbins would.
And after being forced to go hunting and shoot an animal by his uncle, he freaks out because he accidentally shoots a squirrel with a shotgun. I still have questions about the fact that he managed to hit this squirrel with only one pellet, but I'm not a gun expert, so maybe there is some way that this is plausible.
I'm sure that in some universe, by some miraculous mathematical horror show, you can manage this. As it is played off as so lazy, but also at the same time, It clearly matters to this character. Matters quite a lot. And you're supposed to be informed as to the personality of this character. And you are. But he's carrying around this wounded animal. And jokes are being made and everything. And it's like, okay, there is no urgency to this whatsoever. The urgency of him trying to find assistance for this animal goes on for about 10 minutes. With no dramatic tension whatsoever. To which one point he even, like, the scene leaves him, and he's stuck there, and he goes, I have a wounded animal. It's just like, are you saying that to the script in case it forgot? It feels like so much of this movie waves things away by going, it's a kid's movie.
Yeah.
And it's just so lazy. Do things, you can do zany, crazy, insane, and have just an equally zany, crazy, or insane response for those questions. All you really need to say is like, oh, well, the elephant is a clean freak.
Duh. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's something that I've often complained about. Like, just give me that one line. That one 2-second bit of dialogue that would bridge so much together.
Yeah, really consider your universe when you are writing something. Because things will play off each other. And if you simply do the narrative, it doesn't matter. You absolutely rob yourself of content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the kid eventually breaks in, gets caught in a net because, oddly, Doolittle seems to still expect visitors after all this time. And, but the thing I did like in this sequence was that when we first meet Doolittle, he's speaking entirely in animal.
And I love it. So there's two entirely great films in the beginning of this film that I want to see more than this film. The first, of course, is the animated Lara Croft stuff. The other is this.
Yeah.
It would have been amazing if no animals had any recognizable human dialogue in this, and Doolittle's lines, for the most part, would just be, like, animal sounds. The Stubbins should have been the main character, and we should have essentially had to witness the insanity of this man, but have it pan out of, like, yeah, he's just making animal sounds to the animals, but those animals then actually do these complex things. That would have been fascinating to watch. And it's a hell of a performance by Robert Downey
Jr. Oh, yeah. I think it's the best that he does the entire movie.
Yeah. But then they chicken shit out of it and they do the Red October thing where halfway through a sentence, they just transition to speaking English. And it's like, oh, you chickened out.
Yeah, it's like, I get that obviously they couldn't have done that for the entire movie.
Yeah.
But it would have been nice to go back to that for certain periods over the course of the film.
It would have been cool, yeah, to like, okay, jump perspectives for certain scenes for you know, a laugh.
Yeah.
And say at one point he enters the court of Queen Victoria. That's an awful lot of people who would probably think he's insane, right?
Oh, yeah.
It would have been cool to hear, to see their perspective on this insanity instead of being let in on it. Likewise, they, you know, maybe not do it all the time, but have Stubbins maybe a third of the way through the film start learning how to understand the animals and have it transition that way. But no.
Like, they, on the one hand, they did have Stubbins learning language, yeah. But
there's no diegetic change in the dialogue with it. He just suddenly starts talking to the smart mouth, street wise squirrel that he shot and now questions him at every turn. I did kind of like that, where the squirrel's immediately not like, "You're my friend." It's, "I don't trust that asshole." That's a good point.
Oh, no, totally. And so, Doolittle eventually gets summoned to the court of Queen Victoria,
who is sick with unknown disease.
No, they do say, because he has the dog that can detect any poison by smell.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which, actually, in any other universe I would have had a problem with, but here it was kind of believable.
This dog, it should be noted, wears spectacles, so you know it's a smart dog.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
And he does say that she's been poisoned by I think it was the leaf of the deadly nightshade plant.
Oh, right. My mistake. Nightshade. Yeah. Which is totally fucking available and normal. And they're just like, the exotic South Asian nightshade. And it's like, it's fucking nightshade, man.
It's the only poison anyone in Victorian England ever used.
Right? It's that, and then there's arsenic, which they made literally everything out of. You've got deadly, deadly nightshade, motherfuckers.
So, and Doolittle figures out that they have to go on this quest to find this super exotic plant that's only available on one island in the entire planet.
Yeah.
And also just happens to be the plant that his wife was looking for when she died at sea.
Yeah. And trust me, this is going exactly where you think it's going, and nowhere you think it's going. The things that they attach, the mythology they attach to it in the end is truly amazing. However, the journey itself is boring as shit. It's amazing how they took such a simple premise that should be like, you can fill it with anything. You can have pirates, you can have sky pirates, you can have space sky pirates, because it doesn't matter. It's all like Victorian steam age nonsense. And it's boring. It's boring.
And like that is doubly incredible when you think about the simple fact that I've heard people claim that Robert Downey Jr. is not trying because he didn't want to make this movie. He didn't want to be there at all.
I figured this was a Disney contract thing.
I did not actually get that sense from the movie. I think he wanted something where he wasn't going to have to put in any effort after Endgame, which I can totally understand.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to have to put in any more emotional taxing effort of carrying an entire franchise either. I bet his back hurts.
Oh, no doubt. And with things like the costume designs for Doolittle, the accent he was doing, it was like he thought that he was going to come in and just do his Sherlock Holmes for kids.
Yeah, which it is. That is exactly what it is. It is his Sherlock Holmes, plus accent-wise, a wee bit of Scrooge McDuck. and that's what this character is. And if I never read the original Doolittle stories. I know is the Eddie Murphy stuff.
Yeah, same here, actually.
I'm just going to assume that this is how the character was like.
Oh, it probably was, but it was like he shot his first few scenes doing the Holmes accent, and the director told him no, and he didn't quite know what to do after that.
So he went deeper.
Because there are points where he's Welsh at points, he's like Northern England at points.
Yeah.
I couldn't pick this up myself, but I've read about people saying his accent sounds Jamaican at points.
Yeah, yeah. It's all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
It's English inflected as seen through the lens of, I think he's a comedian from New York. But ultimately, if you take this back far enough, he's just some kid who was burned out on SNL.
And now, the animals themselves in the movie, again, the good and the bad here.
Yeah.
I liked John Cena as Yoshi the polar bear.
That was good. I didn't realize that was John Cena. That makes some other jokes make sense. I can't recognize John Cena's voice. Like,
fair enough.
He's not interesting enough. I'm sorry, John Cena. You're not the fucking Rock. I'm sorry. You were the best thing about the newest Transformers movie, though.
Yeah, but he is on the same career track.
He is. He is. Just don't make the Scorpion King. Actually, no. Make the Scorpion King. I want to see that. I want to see how that works out. It's just like, he comes on screen and people are like, you're the ancient Egyptian... you?
Well, I mean, like, he's basically already done the Tooth Fairy, so...
Oh, jeez. Everyone has to do one of the... Everyone has to do one Suburban Commando.
Oh, so true. But the thing I enjoyed with him was that, the way he played Yoshi, if you think about it, Disney now has Brother Bear and Bro Bear.
It's true.
Because his Yoshi is just such a frat boy, bro. It's amazing.
Yes, to be clear, while every other character is Victorian, 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 all of the animals are modern.
Yeah.
So the squirrel that got shot earlier, that's a black guy.
Yep.
Because they got, apparently you gotta shoot the black guy. Or you reveal that the one that got shot is a black guy.
And also with the squirrel... So the main thing that jumped out at me with him is that no one acknowledges this character in any way.
Yeah, not even
for 90% of the movie.
Yeah.
And another thing, there was the sequence where they travel to this island that Doolittle's wife was from.
Yeah.
And we meet Antonio Banderas as his Doolittle's father-in-law.
Who I did not recognize at first, which was lovely.
Yeah.
It was a really cool performance of, like, wait, so the character looks insane. He looks like a pirate king.
Oh.
but the Pirate King of Agrabah? It makes no sense. It's 1,000 Disney things thrown together.
Basically, yeah.
But I kind of liked it.
Oh, no, he was great. It was you look at him and it's like, I can see that you're trying hard here. I don't know why.
And I don't know what you're attempting to achieve, but you sure are trying. Anyway, where were we? Oh, right. It's the Tree of Life. As in, like,
yeah.
From Genesis. Not the band.
To go back to the leak enema that you mentioned earlier. When Austin Powers can pull off a joke.
Yeah.
Better than Disney.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah. And bear in mind, the leak isn't the problem here. It's that the dragon ate, including other people, a Scottish piper somehow.
Yeah.
And the bagpipe got stuck in its ass. That's the end of the movie.
Yeah, we're just gonna let that one sit for a second so you can think about it.
And so they give the dragon an enema on screen. And that's kind of... That's not the climax of the story. That's not the emotional climax.
Nope.
But it's the climax of the film. It's when the film goes, we're done. Because everything that happens after just sort of happens.
Oh, yeah. And especially where, like, they find the fruit, get what they need. Make the dramatic last-second return to Queen Victoria's bedroom, mm-hmm. Which...
Oh, my God. So, Jim Broadbent? Yeah, Jim Broadbent.
I think, yeah.
Jim Broadbent plays the Prime Minister, and he's the evil one who's actually behind everything, and he doesn't get enough screen time for this to actually be worth it, so he just kind of is. But there's, like, a fake countdown... to Doolittle being able to save her life. And it's not like a doctor being like, she only has a minute left to live. It's Jim Broadbent making the official announcement before she has died that the queen has died, as if the second he finishes saying the queen is dead, she'll actually drop dead and it becomes official and legal.
Oh, yeah.
But no. He gets Doolittle launches himself through a window, riding, I don't know, a unicorn. Fuck it, I can't remember, and I don't care.
Well, it was the ostrich, because it's basically
right.
It's the same joke that they did when he first arrived at the castle, mm-hmm. of how this ostrich basically has no brakes.
Yeah, every character gets one joke, and they beat that joke to death.
And, like, everything conveniently wraps up, but I'm kind of going, okay, so they have 5 days, mm-hmm. to sail basically halfway around the world,
mm-hmm.
find this island,
mm-hmm.
give a dragon a prostate exam.
And there's a subplot in this that they're being chased the whole way by a Royal Navy dreadnought.
Yeah.
So, specifically with the intent of destroying them and killing them. So, throughout all of this, the Prime Minister gave an order to send a Royal Navy dreadnought after the one hope for the Queen. These are details that will bite you in the ass.
Yeah, because, like, I'm sitting there going, what did they tell the crew of this dreadnought that they were chasing?
Right. And keep in mind that Michael Sheen's character, who is fully aware of everything, is on that dreadnought. He knows what is happening.
Yeah.
And he's just, kill them all! Really? The Queen. And this isn't haggard old Queen Victoria.
No.
And I don't know when this takes place. It's clearly mid-regency, but Albert's not around, but Victoria's not depressed. So this is like, this time doesn't exist.
Basically, no, it really doesn't.
But it's like the 1850s or something like that.
But and as I say, the time frame involved, again, I think it comes down to that basic problem of there is good stuff here, but there's also so many times where, as the viewer, you stop and go, okay, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Again, I have questions.
Yeah. It's not the worst film I have ever seen. It's not the worst children's film I have ever seen. But, oh my God, it just needs a little bit more work and, oddly enough, more time. Like, if this was Netflix, that probably would have worked.
Right, yeah. I think doing this as a miniseries instead of a movie would have probably addressed an awful lot of my concerns.
Yeah. Because it's not...
I didn't ask.
Bitches, you still recording?
Thankfully, yes.
Because it's not that this film felt rushed, but there's definitely, like, bits where you, as the audience, had to, like, jump over a little hole. Not a plot hole.
Yeah.
A detail hole. And you just like, oh, okay, I guess we're not doing that. Jump. That would have been, like, half an episode.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, and I think at this point I'm just going to go to final thoughts here, because... Again, where else are we going to go with this? It's... I actually, in some ways, compare this to Tom Cruise's The Mummy. Because I went into The Mummy expecting a total train wreck. Mm-hmm. I went into this expecting a total train wreck. Mm-hmm. Both films were disappointing because that's not what I got.
No.
The movie is... It's just there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But
it's there. It's so there. It's just a movie that exists. It's on the same level as, like, when they did those live action Casper, the Friendly Ghost, and the Macaulay Culkin Richie Rich movie.
Yeah.
It's that. It's literally on the exact same level. It's Beethoven 1. No Beethovens after that. Maybe Beethoven 2.
Yeah, no, I could totally say that. But, like, on the other hand, it was oddly educational for me in a way, because there have been so many other animated and live-action kids films where when I would listen to reviews, I would hear those complaints about anachronistic expressions, plot points that didn't truly make... Like, those little things that I just didn't catch.
Yeah.
And then this movie goes, here, this is what they meant.
Yeah, this is what they were talking about. We have no subtlety whatsoever.
No.
This is not a movie that believes in subtlety. And what was that terrific Garth Marenghi quote? I know writers who use context and they're all cowards.
Nice. For my part... I think I would give this probably 2.5 out of 5. It's, like I said, I can't hate it.
Yeah.
I can't call it gloriously terrible. I could see kids enjoying this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think where it also tries to do what a lot of the DreamWorks films... like the Shrek franchise, for instance, tried to, like, just throwing in those jokes that are just there to go, God. Yeah, Mom and Dad, we're thinking of you too.
I was so waiting for this film to end with one of those stupid DreamWorks, now everyone dances to a song from the 80s or 90s ending.
Yeah.
I thought that was
coming. I was expecting, like, a dance number or, like, the equivalent of karaoke or, like, something that's, like, This is so much Victorian Save the Rec Center.
Yes, it really is Victorian Save the Rec Center. Except wildly incompetent. I'm going to give it a 1.5.
Yeah.
Because I really feel like there are some films that are crap and you just accept them to be crap.
Yeah.
This film had just enough hint of something more interesting at almost every moment that I'm offended that they didn't use what they had. It's like this, so much potential. This could be a steampunk dream.
Oh yeah,
and they fucked it up.
Yeah, it's
actually not only that. There's a couple of moments in it when they could have gone big. It's Sherlock Holmes is referenced in this, and it's like, you know, it's supposed to be like a Robert Downey Jr. joke, but fuck you, you are this close to making League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Disney version. Just give me that. Give me Nemo, Sherlock,
yeah.
Doolittle. I don't. You don't have to even come close to actually pulling off anything Alan Moore did. I don't care. I just like the premise.
And, I mean, especially if they could somehow magically pull off a Sean Connery cameo.
Oh, Jesus. Why am I in this movie? You're just here so that we can laugh at you. Of course, stayed home for that.
With that, we're going to call it, and coming up will be our review of Bad Boys 3, and then next month we'll be doing Birds of Prey, followed by Sonic the Hedgehog.
Which I actually look forward to. It's going to be a mess, but it's going to be a glorious mess.
I mean, with Sonic, I'm pretty sure that... I've seen enough James Marsden movies where his co-lead is an animated character.
Yeah.
That I feel like I know exactly where this is going to go. But partly out of respect for the animators and partly because I just gotta know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how the hell did this monstrosity turn out? And I should say, I hate Jim Carrey films. So I am already setting aside a lot to intentionally go into enjoying this film.
For now, though, that's a wrap. Don't forget to hit those like and subscribe buttons, share this video with your friends, drop us a line anytime you like.